Well, Christmas Day is past. I'm sure we all have our own stories of what that day and what this past week has been like. I have my own. I'm preaching, so you get to hear mine. If you were up here, you could tell yours. Megan and David came down from New York Christmas Eve, and we had a wonderful time together. I told you that it would just be the four of us together for Christmas this year. Christmas night, a call and a FaceTime from Allison and Michael and William in Long Beach, California, saying, "Dad, we have a surprise for you." I said, "Well, what's that?" "We're coming to see you." So that morning, the next morning, Mary and I drove to Newark and picked up Allison and William at 6 a.m., and they were with us then until last evening when we took them back to Newark and David and Megan returned to New York City. That was the wonderful high. And then that Christmas night, got a call from Lena that Lester was back in the hospital. Went to see him, and he said, "I'm done. I'm finished. I'm ready to go. I'm tired. I'm ready to be with the Lord." And we had a wonderful time sharing, crying, reflecting. And Lester is ready to be in his eternal home. I got an email then that next day from Barbara saying that her brother Keith had died unexpectedly, and she's grieving along with her family. Those are highs and lows of our time. And I'm sure you have your own stories to tell. Christmas is over. The day, or a couple days after Christmas, our family went to the outlet mall over in Limerick to do some shopping. This is my observation, that as far as the world goes, Christmas is long past and forgotten already. All signs of Christmas are gone from the stores. There's now spring items in the stores. Decorations are down, boxed, and forgotten. And perhaps you see a few remnants of it, of tables where they're trying to sell wrapping paper, whatever, from this past season. And surely store employees are relieved, sick and tired of hearing jingle bells play over the intercom every half an hour since Thanksgiving or beyond, before Thanksgiving, probably Halloween. But I'm glad this morning I'm not a store employee. I'm glad I'm in the kind of work that compels us to think about what it is, what time we are in right now, in this Christmas season, that compels us to read stories like we read this morning from the Psalms, declaring the praise of the whole cosmos in regard to God's presence with us, that invites us to reflect with the Psalm or with the prophet Isaiah, thinking about what it means that God is with us, and then to hear the stories like Simeon and Anna and the parents of Jesus presenting him there in the temple. And like all other male Jewish babies, Jesus is circumcised and thus becomes a child of Israel as the law of Moses demands. And a pious old man, Simeon, goes into the temple and takes that baby Jesus in his arms and predicts that this baby will grow to be the salvation of Israel. But Simeon also predicts that this Jesus will be the reason for the fall and the rising of many, whatever that means, and tells Mary that a sword will pierce your inmost being also. Then the Holy Family, Mary, Joseph, and the little Jesus return home to an undecidedly unholy little backwater town of Galilee and Nazareth. Now Luke's the only gospel that tells us anything about the childhood of Jesus, and that itself very brief. Jesus, in the other gospel, seemed to drop out of nowhere with little mention of any family background or hometown. But Luke gives us a few precious details of Mary and Joseph dutifully, faithfully fulfilling their religious obligations and observations, just like every other faithful Jewish family. Then they go back to everyday life in Galilee, back to the shop, back to the daily grind of household chores and caring for an infant, including the sleepless nights and the days when you're so crazy you can't think straight for lack of sleep, and a fussy baby and dirty diapers. Quite a contrast to the stories we read about of Jesus and Mary and Joseph last week as we celebrated Christmas Eve here. We had angels, we had heavenly singing, we had beloved Christmas carols, but not too much singing in today's gospel. No angels as a holy family move from the little town of Bethlehem and the holy city of Jerusalem back home, back to everyday workday life in Nazareth. I don't know about you, but I feel a little sad this Sunday after Christmas. And even though the tone of this service is about joy and celebration for God's advent among us and the hope of salvation for all the cosmos, I'll admit I still feel a little down that Christmas is over and that families return to their place of work and routine life, and the house seemed very empty and quiet when we got home last night. But I thought then, that's how faith often feels, isn't it? Those wonderful, glorious highs followed by the inevitable, ordinary lows. Sometimes we speak of the high, pregnant kairos moments, those times when we find ourselves at the summit and we know that we are living in the right, opportune time. That Greek word kairos, Greek word for time. The Greeks had another word for time as well, chronos. Chronos meaning that ordinary passage of time, time kept by the clock. The predictable, sequential sense of time, the sort of time that we live as we mark now this day and this night, as we wrap up this year, and some of us attending or hosting New Year's Eve parties. Goodbye, 2017. Welcome, 2018. Thank God we don't write too many checks anymore to get that wrong up until July. When we're still writing 2017. Another year older, big deal. Now I recall being a kid, don't you, when you finally are old enough to stay up till midnight on New Year's Eve to see the new year come in. And I remember that time of great anticipation, thinking that, okay, something's going to happen. I'm going to see the new year come in. Come in from where? I didn't know or what. I had no idea, but I knew that it was going to be great and exciting because everyone stayed up to watch. And then being greatly disappointed by the fact that a night was as cold and dark and uneventful as any other night, and I couldn't figure out why in the world people stayed up for this. Just another chronos moment in time. That's the challenge of chronos, calendar, sequential, ordinary, mundane time. Kairos time, on the other hand, the right time, the opportune time when we feel our spirits rise, our hearts beat a little faster, and we stand at the summit, enjoying the moment, relishing the event, whatever it is. And the way I see it, Christmas is that Kairos time. Many of us look forward to Christmas, count down the days, love the songs, the good cheer, the events that go with it, the decorating. But the Sunday after Christmas seems more like the Kronos kind of time. The tree trimmings are either boxed up or will soon be boxed up and lugged to the basement of the attic for another 11 months. The trash hauled to the curb and pounds to be dropped from too much candy over the holidays. And back to the office or the school on Tuesday. Good time while it lasted. Now it's back to every day. And most of us, when we're moving into Kairos, excited, happy about Christmas, we want Luke to tell us a good story to help us celebrate. And Luke comes through for us. Nobody's better than Luke's gospel for Christmas with the nativity in Bethlehem, the shepherds and the angels. Luke knows how to throw a Christmas party. But this Sunday, after Christmas, as we plod back into ordinary Kronos time with the stuff to be put away, the bills to be paid, estimated quarterly taxes to be paid in a couple weeks, children to be gotten off to school, the office to be re-entered, ordinary life to be resumed. There is another Christmas story that we need to hear, that we heard this morning. We're in the meantime, that is ordinary average time, and the incarnation and the birth of Christ, God has taken time for us. Watch the young Jesus go to the temple with his parents, dutifully following religious ritual, accustomed habits, then watch them go back to Galilee for the time being, to live out their ordinary time. And we don't hear much more about Jesus from Luke or any of the Gospels until Jesus is an adult and then is baptized. But a lot of ordinary time goes by. Apparently, none of the Gospel writers thought it really important enough to record. God, according to this story, though, is with us. Emmanuel, God doesn't drop down out of the heaven, doesn't descend on some fuzzy spiritual cloud from on high. God, born to us, with us, here, now, right here in our burrow, which could be called Nazareth if we wanted to admit its ordinariness. God with us in our families as we are going about the tasks, fulfilling our duties, saying goodbye, freeing our children to move away, putting food on the table, daily life. Watch Jesus in the meantime going back home, leaving the holy city, going back to Nazareth, being part of a thoroughly human family. And we take heart because that's our family. Do we want to be close to God? Sure. Then it seems the gospel story for today is telling us, go home. Go home. Go back to your routines. Live with this through Monday and Tuesday and the rest of the week, knowing that Jesus Christ, God, has come close to you and your family, whatever your situation is today, and whatever time it is for you. And because of this, we rejoice even in the ordinary time. Even when we can't rejoice with our tongues or our spirits, yet there is a rejoicing deep in our souls that transcends time, that transcends what's going on around us. For the Psalms snow and cold and princes and children and animals and all creation, and Walter Brueggemann in exuberance. And I heard him preach a sermon, Mary and I got into it, and he was saying, "The pineapples declare the glory of God." I don't know where that came from. Because it's all infused with the presence of the Christ who is not chosen to be off somewhere in some distant cosmos, living in some heaven light years away, as the songs we sing declares, but here today in this place. Even when it feels so mundane and so difficult, so that even when we find ourselves nearing the end of our earthly journey and our bodies and minds fail us, those chronos moments too become kairos moments, when the time is right for us to be born into the next life, our eternal dwelling with God in heaven. Whatever time it is for us in the present moment, we gather for worship to consider another reality, that God is in time and before time. For Christmas, one of you gave me the Richard Rohr's latest book called The Divine Dance. And as I started reading that this week, I came across words that I wanted to share with you. And I quote, "The ancient Greek fathers depict the Trinity as a round dance, an event that has continued for 6,000 years and 6 times 6,000 and beyond the time when humans even knew time. An infant current of love streams without ceasing to and fro and to and fro and to and fro, gliding from the Father to the Son and back to the Father in one timeless happening. This circular current of Trinitarian love continues night and day, the orderly and rhythmic process of subatomic particles spinning round and round at immense speed echoes its dynamism." End of quote. On this last Sunday of 2017, on this Sunday after Christmas, as we move back into our ordinary lives, we stop to contemplate what time it is for each of us. We affirm with the psalmist, with the prophets, with the gospels, that Christ, who was before time, has entered into time and is making all things new. That same Christ will be with us as we step over the threshold into the next life, as we let go into the loving embrace of this loving Trinity of community with God and with all that ever was and ever will be, all caught up in this joyous dance. That's a good story. A good story to hear on this Sunday after Christmas, as we say goodbye to another year and welcome in a new year with whatever it will hold for us individually and as a congregation. Amen.